With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello all, welcome to another episode of Armchair Cricket Podcast, a podcast focusing on test cricket by armchair critics of the game. I'm your host, Ajit. In today's episode, which will probably be a little bit more Sri Lankan centric again, we have a very special guest, a first-time guest on the podcast joining us, Aravindan. Hello Aravindan, welcome to the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hi Ajit, pleasure to be here.
Pleasure will, I hope, also be mine and all our listeners. But, you know, I was telling you off-air, we recently had somebody you know well, probably Estelle Vasudevan as well, on the podcast because there was a tour of Sri Lanka and we needed somebody who could give us a Sri Lankan perspective, right? So in this podcast, I bring the Indian perspective as an Indian expat. So you can help me with the Sri Lankan perspective. So also before we go into the games and other things, right, I want to always understand how somebody came to cricket from the Southeast Asian or the South Asian subcontinent. It's really not that much of a surprise, but which was the turning point for you, or when did the bug really catch you?
I think just like any Sri Lankan, the 1996 Benson and Hedges series in Australia was the turning point. And I think that garnered a lot of attention in Sri Lanka, especially with the way Kalu played and, like, you know, how we took on the Australians after all the controversy that happened. And it kind of inspired me as a young child, and immediately the World Cup followed. So I think there was no looking back. And from that point onwards, cricket has been an absolutely integral part of the game, irrespective of the ups and downs. So I mean, like most of us love talking about the game and also writing about the game on my own little way. So that's how my association with the game began. And here we are.
How I got in touch with you is through your tweets. So I saw your tweets. I think we started interacting with each other and then we, you know, picked up this conversation thread. But I like to see that, you know, more and more people are following cricket and more people are putting their thoughts out about cricket. So, you know, do you do something else in your as a real job, or is reporting or working on news stories your full-time job?
No, I'm far away from reporting. So I actually work for one of the healthcare companies in Sri Lanka. So basically, I'm a doctor by qualification and I work in the corporate sector. So yeah, cricket is just by, it's my passion.
I think I should have started the other way, but thanks for clarifying that actually cricket is also a passion, it's just a hobby for you. So very interesting. You were also telling me off air, you've had some experiences traveling around Bangalore. You've had a chance to go there multiple times. You've had some post-graduation experiences. So very interesting to see that you actually qualified as a doctor, but then, you know, you still retain that passion for cricket. Some of our guests previously have been also associated with the medical field, but I guess it's our first loves, cricket, right?
Absolutely.
So now, if you were to pick from the Sri Lankan current crop of players, who would be your favorites?
I think from, to be honest, like, it's very difficult to pinpoint a favorite. The harsh reality is that nobody has got to that level, unfortunately, you know. Nobody has made us fall in love with the game like the previous generations of cricketers have done. But if I had to pick my favorite, it will simply be Dasun Shanaka for the personality that he is and for the fact that he stood up when there was absolutely nobody and the game was crumbling. He has provided leadership. Of course, yes, he's having his own inadequacies from a strategic perspective, which everybody has. But I mean, every now and then he pulls off miracles. I mean, not every now and then, frequently pulls off miracles and keeps our hopes alive. So I think Dasun Shanaka is head and shoulders above the rest.
Interesting. Now, so what if I were to tell you, I spoke with somebody else from your part of the world and they were telling me, at that point in time, Dasun Shanaka was not only an inevitable choice, but also a sort of a favored choice because of his background, his club background and so other things. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I just kind of differ on that because in Sri Lanka, we have a legacy of leadership pipeline. So if you really go back in history and see, like, during the times when even India was struggling to find a skipper for their sides, I'm talking about the 1990s and 2000s until Ganguly came along. And even after Ganguly left, when there was a transition between Dravid and until Dhoni came in, we never had that problem. I mean, Sri Lanka always had a pipeline of leaders from Arjuna Ratunga to Sanath Jayasuriya, Mawan Athapattu, Hashan Tilakaratna, Mahela. We always had it. But unfortunately, after Angelo's leadership tenure came to a premature end, we were left with people and it was like a revolving door. So in that context, you have a profile of Sri Lankan skippers. You know, they are from a certain club, they are from a certain school, they inevitably are top-class batsmen, like you have grabbed the eyeballs of the world, but Dasun wasn't any of that. In fact, when he was picked for the 2019 tour of Pakistan, when the seniors pulled out, you know, he was a he was an extremely unorthodox choice. But if you take his cricketing credentials, composure, the way he handles himself on the field, I think it was an inevitable choice because at that time when Dasun took over, there was absolutely nobody. I mean, you the Kusal era didn't go well. The Kusal Janit, Kusal Mendes era ended even before it started. And that was the England tour in 2021. It looks like a long time before. But when that whole leadership saga happened and Kusal Mendes got into this unnecessary issue in Durham, we didn't have actually anybody. Because if you remember, Ajit, all the senior players, you know, there was a lot of criticism about the yo-yo test, the fitness standards that were coming in. And everybody was saying, look, you know, we are going to beat Sri Lankan cricket and let's see who's going to take it up. And so this guy came up and took it up. So in my opinion, it was an obvious choice in a way, but he was also a far-fetched choice in another way. So it's a mixture of both.
Right. I mean, for me, I think you pointed the right thing there because somehow Chandimal, I think, could have done more. Also, you're right, Kusal Mendes, Kusal Pereira. I have a lot of hopes for these people. But, they may yet come back, right? Chandimal is closer. Mendes and Pereira have a little bit more of a career left. I hope they come back and, you know, a little bit pick up that mantle. I mean, sometimes, right, when we measure our heroes with the greatest of sometimes in the sport, like Sangakkara, Jayavardhana and Muralidharan, even Jayasurya, right? It's not correct to measure other players by their standards. They were really some of the best in their time, right? So anyway, that is one point. But if you come back to the series, so I think the series ended with a bit of a whimper, probably not how Sri Lanka would have wanted because they started really well. They competed really well in the T20Is. ODIs, even the first one was pretty competitive, but then on it went started going down. Was it just a, you know, it happens that when a tour goes bad, it goes really bad. Was it that for Sri Lanka towards the end?
Absolutely. I would just put it down to that. And in my personal opinion, there has been a lot made out of this because we have seen it happen. I mean, we have watched Sri Lankan cricket over a period of time. And if you go back to 2002 in Sarjah versus Pakistan, in one of the Tri-Nation finals in 2002 April, Murali dislocated his shoulder while he was fielding. And then, you know, the batting just crumbled and I think we got out for a double-digit score. The reputed 2011 World Cup batting lineup, including the likes of Sangha, Mahela, Dilshan, Taranga and Matthews, got bundled out for 43 versus South Africa in the first game of a series in South Africa. And I'm not trying to give any excuses, but, you know, if you really understand the game, you see when you're up against a top quality bowler like Mohammad Siraj. I mean, even in yesterday's game, he picked up 4 wickets. He was on song, the ball was moving around, and all of a sudden you lose 1 wicket, 2 wicket, and there's this fear psychosis within the dressing room. And you, before you know, you are gone. I mean, if you really looked at the way the Sri Lankan team played that day, you saw the way Vanindu Hasaranga got out. It was a straightforward delivery which he could have planted his leg outside the off stump and just blocked. But his feet were not moving. So, you know, it was kind of a brain freeze. And we got out for 73. That's fine. So I think that's bound to happen. So it's about how you get out of it. But there were certain things which were highlighted and the inadequacies were emphatically highlighted. So I think that we need to focus on. But I'm not reading too much into the 73 or neither am I so worried about it. It's not false optimism, but it happens.
Fair enough. So, but I also understand where you're coming from. They wanted to be out of there. Once they conceded 390, probably they said, you know what, this is going to be a bit tough to win. But that's when, right, you sometimes think of making something for yourself. I mean, there is sometimes a little bit of a, I'll call this selfishness that comes in where you say, it's okay, I'll make a 50 for myself today, I'll play for myself today. And anyway, the team will benefit. The longer I bat, the better it is for the team, right? Sometimes that goes missing out of the window. Sometimes it keeps the top order batsmen motivated. People like Avishka Fernando, Kusal Mendes also had a, you know, not a good tour. Charit Asalanka not a good tour, right? Shanaka did really well. I mean, only the last two games he didn't do well. Hasaranga with the bat, for example. Chamika Karunaratna can do more. So these were all people who, one of them or two of them had to say, you know what, screw it. I'm going to just stay here. I'm going to take it to the last over and let's see if they can get me out. That didn't materialize. And India were probably going to win the game anyway. But the way it happened was a little bit of a letdown, I think. But also, from a bowling perspective, was a very tough tour for the fast bowlers. Kasun Rajita, Lahiru Kumara. I think Chamika Karunaratna is there or thereabouts. Dasun Chanaka will give you 4 or 5 overs in a game, not more. But the main bowling, when Kasun Rajita, Lahiru Kumara, I think they suffered a lot. But I think it's a good turning point in their careers if they can pick up from this.
Absolutely. In my opinion, it's unfortunate in a sense that we couldn't field our first line bowling lineup. And I would have really loved to have seen how Dushmanta Chamira and Lahiru Madhushankar would have operated in tandem on such strenuous, I mean, like demanding conditions. Unfortunately, both of them were injured. Not an excuse again. But in a full-strength Sri Lankan side, obviously Kasun Rajita and Lahiru Kumara will be vying for the third seamer spot. So, but I have a little bit of an extreme view or probably a contrarian view where going into the World Cup, I would like to see either Matisha Pathirana, who plays for CSK, or Nuwan Tushara, who played in Australia, take the third bowler slot. Because just like what you said with the bat, okay, we are not doing great with the ball. We don't have match winners, to be honest. So let's throw this somebody in who is unorthodox and just stir the pot. If they come good, that's brilliant. If they don't, that's fine. Because for Rajita to succeed, Rajita, I rate him very highly. He has been doing extremely well in Test cricket. And he needs a little bit of assistance from this wicket. So if the World Cup was on a different track, maybe say South Africa, I would have placed my hopes on him very highly. Lahiru Kumara, again, is a wild card. But I think we have given him enough chances. And I again believe that, you know, he's very young, raw. He will become way better than what he is. We should remember this is a guy who has won us a game in Barbados, which is one of the strongholds of West Indies cricket. And he picked up a lot of wickets back in 2018, if I remember right. And there's potential. But in the short term, looking at the World Cup, and again, it's not a false optimism, but I just hope that these guys, Lahiru Madhushankar and Dushmanta Chamira, are fit and firing. They last through the World Cup. And then we have either one of those two players I mentioned as third seamer when required. And then either Lahiru Kumara or Kasun Rajita could be backup. But You saw the difference in the Indian bowling lineup and the Sri Lankan lineup. I think Sri Lanka batsmen were more generous, or batters rather, were more generous in gifting their wickets away. But mind you, when you're against Rohit Sharma, Shubman Gill, Virat Kohli, Surya Kumar Yadav, Ishan Kishan, it can't get any difficult than that. So I'm pretty sure that they would have learned from it and hopefully become a different version when they are faced with a similar situation, which they will face for sure against England, Australia, and all types of teams.
Agreed. So it can be like that, you know. But for me, I think it's about really your trump card or your mainstay of the attack. You need one or two. So for me, I was hoping Rajitha could graduate and become the mainstay even in limited overs games. He does well in tests, no doubt. But also Kumara has had his chances, you're right. Pathirana, I don't know if his time has come, if he's ready to take the mantle on. But for me, Chamira is the real disappointment. I want to see more of him. He's such an exciting bowler. When he's on song, he has the pace, he has the bounce. That's what I was looking for in Rajitha, really, because he's also hit the deck sort of bowler. He bowls fast. Kumara, we really hope, you know, he turns the corner and he has the capacity to lead this attack. So I'm thinking come the World Cup, you'll probably see any three out of, you know, Kumara, Madhushanka, Chamira, and maybe Pathirana, really, right? But you'll be playing the World Cup again in subcontinental conditions. So I'm thinking, again, the spinners will have to stand up a little bit. Hasaranga, but also for me, Tikshana, Hasaranga, I see them in the lineup all the time, simply because of Tikshana can even open the bowling if required, right? So let's see. I'm more counting on those people to really stand up, because you'll always have somebody like Dasun Shanaka who'll give you those 4-5 overs additional medium pace bowling if required. So even if you go with two fast bowlers, you can cover that up, because if you have Dhananjay De Silva in the 11, he'll give you those other 4-5. Charita Slanka can bowl. So for me, it's not a problem if you're playing in subcontinent, right? You have plenty of options if you're Sri Lanka. From that perspective, I would say yes. They'd let themselves down a little bit. Somebody could have really stood up as well. Look, the bowling lineup is irrespective of, the batting lineup, right? It's irrespective of who you start off with. Somehow, Avishka Fernando did not come good. Navanidhu Fernando started well. But, you know, I'm worried about these Fernandos. Oshada also started well, I remember. Now, I don't see him in the 11, right? But maybe he's a long format player. We don't know. So, Mendes and Pereira, really, these are the two guys who now need to stand up and take Sri Lanka forward in the top 4 or 5. So, I'm hoping more from them, right? And Asalanka, really, he played such a match-winning knock recently. Now he's nowhere to be seen. So for you, are you happy with the way this lineup, the top order is shaping up?
Absolutely not. Yes and no. Again, you know, I'm not trying to sit on the fence, but I'll rationalize my thought process. Right now, I'm not thinking beyond 2023 World Cup. And about 2 years before, we did not have a batting lineup, to be fair enough. If you remember the first game that we played, the first ODI that we played in England in 2021 after the debacle, we were falling like a pack of cards. Asalanka made his debut in that game. So right. On paper, all of these players have massive potential. Absolutely massive potential. Potential superstars. You might have seen Asalanka scoring that 100 in the Australian series. Right. You saw his match-winning performance against Afghanistan. So the potential is there. The same with Avishka Fernando. Has a century against South Africa. The shot he played against Jofra Archer was probably the shot of the tournament for Sri Lanka in 2019 World Cup. Followed it up with a century versus West Indies in the initial part of his career. Has been touted highly right from the start. And Kusal Mendes, we need not talk about him. Like, you know, absolute potential. He has shown what he's capable of quite a few times. But what actually lacks is consistency and match temperament. So if you really look at the Indian series, Avishka Fernando threw his wicket away. He played across the line for a ball which actually did not swing in the first game, played across the line, skied it, got out. Then on absolute road in Kolkata, he played a loose shot, got bowled in between the bat and pad. And here he poked outside the off stump and got out. So what each and every one of them needs to remember is that at the end of the day, they need to take a leaf out of the New Zealand game like yesterday. They need to understand that the top order has more time than they think. If they stay there, inevitably they are going to score runs, or at least they set the platform and bring it up to say around after 35 overs, at least we are maybe somewhere around 175, 180 for 3 wickets and setting the platform for the likes of Dasun Shanaker to come and fire. So if Shanaker fires from that point onwards, once in 3-4 games, we are going to be in a good stead. So inevitably, as the saying goes, you target 300, you will end up with probably 325, 330. That has happened with Sri Lanka in recent times as well. So on paper, I don't think we can have a better batting lineup. I'm really impressed with Nuanindu Fernando. I have been following him from the domestic circuit, like in Sri Lanka Invitational League. Absolutely eye-catching and looks to have a good head on his shoulders. He showcased that it's not easy playing in front of a crowd at Kolkata. He scored a 50, unfortunately got run out. Even in the, I mean, all the chaos that happened in the last game at Trivandrum, he was looking somewhat okay. He was finding his own way, surviving until he got out. So this is what I believe. Like, if this team realizes their potential and, like, you know, if they could translate their potential into at least a certain amount of performance, Sri Lanka will be in a reasonably good state. And I still have that belief. It might be there are certain technical inadequacies. For example, something that has been plaguing Kusal Mendes has been his vulnerability outside the off stump. You saw that in the Indian series as well. Vulnerability around the corridor of uncertainty. So
right.
I certainly believe that hopefully for Sri Lanka cricket's sake, they rectify it within the next few months. And if they do, I'm hopeful that, I'm not saying we are going to be favorites or contenders for the World Cup, but I will be really happy if we put up a show where somewhere towards until the latter part of the tournament, we are, at least even if we have an outside chance of qualifying for the semifinals, assuming that we get through the qualifiers, I'll be more than happy. That will be a big win.
Understandable. You actually already answered my next potential question. Now, okay. I think we can go on to the New Zealand-India series. Only one match has happened, but what a thriller it was. Shubman Gill hitting a double 100, showing he belongs and he should have to now be removed by, you know, some injury or something from at least the ODI lineup. The chances he's getting now, he's showing that he's confident enough. He scored 100 in that last game versus Sri Lanka. Now he scored a double 100 here. Took India to 349. I mean, so you would think most teams, right, would not be able to really perform as well as New Zealand did without their top two players. You don't have Tim Southee, you don't have Kane Williamson as well. I really appreciate how well New Zealand batted yesterday, because you pointed out correctly in your analysis in that previous Sri Lankan series where you said the top order just took more time. And even after the top order went away, you would think if Glenn Phillips Tom Latham dismissed with such a lot of score to get, you'd think, okay, this is a done deal. I remember tweeting that. But then how wrong it proved, where they were within two hits of taking the game, really. And Michael Bracewell probably played the innings of his life yesterday.
Probably we would have thought he had played the innings of his life when New Zealand played Ireland sometime back, I guess. He
exactly.
Scored that thing. So, I mean, to be honest, like, I actually forgot that and I was... I have heard about Bracewell, but I remember him. His spin bowling is what actually stood in my mind. So, I think... I think it will be very, very difficult to better this. It has to be the innings of his life. But I think New Zealand will be hoping that he will better that. If he does so, that's going to be one awesome knock. Because what I really loved about that innings was, as you said, you tweeted and at 131 for 6, if I'm right, when Latham got out, I actually went around. I wasn't actually following the game. The game was going in the background. And after some time, I came and looked at the score. My goodness, they had 100. And still, they were a fair distance away. 120 runs or probably 130 odd away when I came back. And, you know, it was just an absolutely insane level of hitting. We have seen innings like that. I think probably you would remember Marcus Tonis played an innings of that sort versus New Zealand sometime back where he got run out, I guess, scored 140-odd runs. Tisara Pereira played a similar knock against New Zealand and almost pulled off a win for Sri Lanka from an improbable position back in 2017-18, if I remember right, while he was leading the side.
Right.
Now Bracewell. Right. And those innings, just, you know, you had to just say hats off. And it's a pleasure to see them. It's a pleasure to see those innings happen.
Absolutely. I think the difference was Siraj towards the end, because, you know, India fast bowlers were panicking. And
Ajit, don't forget Thakur. Uh-huh. I read somewhere It could be Gill. It could be Bracewell. I think it's a famous Indian journalist who had tweeted. I don't remember his name, but he's good. He had tweeted. It could be Gill. It could be Bracewell. It could be anybody. But at the end of the day, Lord has the last laugh.
Always. Always. Absolutely.
So, yeah, but on a serious note, it was no surprise that Siraj picked up those wickets. And I think we should really appreciate Hardik Pandya as well, right? That in his, when he came back, 4 overs, 45 runs for no wicket. When he came back, hit 5th over, he didn't give away runs. And that was the major turning point. So the Indian bowling stood up and Siraj led the way, obviously.
Absolutely. And look, Siraj is now sort of peaking nicely in his, you know, in his preparations. He looks like a really good bowler in all formats, especially in the limited overs format. He's come very far from where he was even a year ago. A year ago, we were all thinking of him as a sort of test match bowler and so on. Now, he's really good even in the shorter formats. And something that we will always, you know, say now going forward, this guy is now ready. As Shami is sort of nearing the end of his career, Siraj is right there or thereabouts that he'll pick up that mantle of somebody who can bowl 138, 140, 142 and still, you know, trouble the batsman with those slightly test match lengths. Those are still very useful. Not everybody is good enough to go on the back foot and loft you behind your head on so on and so forth. So he really was the difference there, because those overs that he bowled near the end, where he was going for maybe even 11, maybe 8, maybe 9 and over, really kept New Zealand down. 2 to 3 runs in those overs, and they would have come to within one hit, if not, you know, winning the game in that last over. So, Shardul Thakur had to bowl the last over because Shami had been bowled out. You were right. Even the captain probably knew Lord had to have the last laugh and so on. So, he saved him for the end. But, you know, as a game, all and you know, all out entertainer, if you look at it that way, that was the most important thing for me, and that was the thing I would say, you know, you're looking for from an ODI game. At the end, there was a lot to write about, a lot to talk about, but at the end it was an absolute thriller. So that I really like. So I'm really looking forward to how the rest of the series will go. So do you see New Zealand being able to make a comeback, maybe even scare India, if not even win a couple of games outright here?
Here's the thing which I see, like, in my opinion, like, just like with Sri Lanka's Asia Cup campaign, New Zealand's performance yesterday was actually distorted. If you take Bracewell's supreme brilliance out, New Zealand actually did not compete with India. But then somebody could also say, look, if you take Gill out of the equation, or had Latham latched on to that chance when Gill was around 50, it would have been a different story.
Exactly. So, that's stumping, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. But I personally believe, as you said, Ajit, New Zealand are New Zealand. They always punch above their weight. On paper, they may not seem like strong enough to compete with India, especially with Saudi and especially Williamson not in the equation. But I think it will be a reasonably well-contested series. And if they can pull off a victory, will be massive. But New Zealand have always done well in India. Since 2019, I think this is the first win India have had over New Zealand, if my stats are correct, because I remember reading that somewhere. New Zealand has been India's Achilles heel always. So surely not going to write them off. And I mean, if they could really compete, it will be brilliant, right? At the end of the day, in this World Cup year, you don't really worry about the results, right? It's all about like what you get out of each game. And yesterday's game was an absolute blinder. So let's hope we get two more, at least near good games.
So from Indian perspective, as the World Cup nears, they are sort of going through a few combinations. Now with, you know, Pant not being able to play, it's sort of a blessing in disguise, I must say. But for the Indian 11, they don't have enough left-handers in the top six. That's an issue. Ishan Kishan will probably get a longer rope now that Pant cannot really come and play. So do you think India are sort of going in the right direction from a preparation to the World Cup perspective?
I absolutely think so, because there are a lot of things falling in place. And if you see from 2011, I mean, after the 2007 debacle, in an ideal world, India should have actually won all three World Cups, because they have been absolutely brilliant and they have not lost many games as well. In 2015, it was a semi-final. In 2019, it was again the semi-final. And I think 2023 has to be India's year, simply because you have an insane lineup. And it's a matter of picking the right choices. So I think in the past, especially in the T20 World Cups, there have been certain decisions made which actually did not serve the best interest of the team. But I think right now you're on track. And yeah, not having many left-handers is a chunk. But why would you complain when you have three batters in the lineup who have scored three double hundreds? And then you have somebody by the name of Surya Kumar Yadav who's replacing Shreyas Iyer. I mean, like, that's insane, isn't it? Like, when Sri Lanka were playing, I was just thinking, okay, you get through all these people and then invokes Hardik Pandya. I mean, you don't know how the opponents will feel. Like, this is strong as anything. But I seriously think in the subcontinent, whatever you say, the batting is what's going to click because the quality of bowling is going to be evened out simply because of the flat nature of the wickets, which I see the 2023 World Cup will be on. And even then, you have the likes of, we need not talk about Bumrah, we know what he's capable of. But Siraj will be a key. And spinners, I don't know, but maybe Kuldeep Yadav would be an X factor, especially somebody like Kuldeep Yadav, a left arm wrist spinner, takes the track out of the equation. So I'm curious to see how it turns out. So I kind of feel that it's India's year and India has to lose this World Cup.
Interesting.
I don't think anybody is going to beat them. I hope I'm not jinxing it. But if you look from a technical perspective, it is that. And mind you, Ajit, one thing I see India doing differently right now is they are having consistency. When Ishan Kishan scored that double hundred, they could have easily said, okay, Gill, you stay out, now Ishan comes in. But that was a very, very tough call and an audacious call. They said, Kishan, you sit out, Gill is our first choice, he will continue. And you're having that consistency in the side. And I think that will serve you well this year compared to the last few World Cups.
Indeed. So that was really quite a call to make from Rahul Dravid. And then it was, I think, it was indeed Rohit. But, you know, the one person whose spot in the 11 itself looks a bit weak is Rohit himself. I think he needs to turn on the tap as well, score some big runs. You know, as a skipper, you always appreciate his cool. Even yesterday when the bowlers were getting thrashed, you could see that he was keeping cool. He had a couple of things up his sleeve he knew would work. And it somehow did. But Rohit, the batsman, also needs to come to the party because with Virat Kohli rediscovering his mojo, at least in the limited overs formats. And people like Kishan, Gill, and KL Rahul. So KL Rahul himself, you tend to forget him, but he showed his importance in that low-scoring game, right, where he took India to home, to victory. So with all of these people there, it's going to be very interesting. So you're right. From bowling perspective, I always expect one holding spinner, either somebody like Sundar or Akshar Patel or Jadeja. And you'll have one wrist spinner always in the 11. It could be Chahal. It could be Kuldeep on a good pitch, maybe both of them, right? So it's going to be a very interesting sort of a year indeed. But India found a way to lose. You're right. Somehow they get to the semifinal, then it all comes a cropper and they lose. So let's hope they're able to make that difference and come up and win the World Cup again at home. So speaking of World Cup, we have multiple Indian players calling for an early start, right, to try and combat the dew, right? So normally, a day-night game, which you would expect most of the World Cup to be day-night games, you would expect that it starts around 2 p.m. India time. Is it something that you think is a good idea to start it a little earlier to combat the dew, given that it'll be played in October, it'll be monsoon, and, you know, it'll always be a bit muggy?
I actually wish the game start at 2:30 so that you could 1:30 or 2:30 so that you can see more of it. But from a cricketing perspective, I think obviously when Ashwin says something, you just listen, right? You don't argue with it. Or probably one of the best brains going around. But an early start obviously seems, I think it happened previously as well, right? If I remember right, in 2012 when Pakistan and England toured, 2012-13, there were some early starts as I remember. So yeah, definitely worth it because at the end of the day, you don't want the dew to have an unreasonable impact and skew the game in favor of somebody. But here's another interesting thought, Ajit. So I'm all for it, though as a cricket fan, I would hate it because it would mean the amount of time I could watch the game will be cut down significantly because, you know, it's going to overlap with all our working hours. But I'm especially in the subcontinent, so I don't know whether the TV broadcasters will like it. Most probably they will not. But here's the thing which I would want to pitch, an idea which actually resonated with me. The South African team, previous South African team analyst, Prasanna Agoram, right? He appears on these programs with Ashwin as well. He mentioned something quite interesting. Take the toss away and make it a strategic bet. Each team has to offer the amount of runs that they are willing to offer the opponent. So the team that offers the most runs gets the opportunity to make the decision. So what I'm saying is Sri Lanka play India. India puts 10 runs on the table. Sri Lanka puts 20 runs on the table. Sri Lanka win the toss. So when India starts,
score will be plus 10.
India will start with
plus 20 or plus 10.
So it's about, that makes it really strategic. So if I am confident of chasing it down, sometimes I might offer 20 runs, the opponent offer 50 runs. So I think there it's not quite cricket, but cricket has to think out of it because that's a significant amount of strategic decision-making involved. So as a fan, I would like to stick for a 1:30 start, perhaps even a 2 o'clock start. But from a cricketing perspective, early start, I'm all for it.
You know, you're absolutely right, first of all. With what control the advertisers and the broadcasters have, they will not like a later start. That's the reality of it.
Perhaps we might end up at 12:30. That's my guess.
That'll be great, actually. 12:30 will actually make it easy if you're a player, I suppose, right?
Yeah.
But if you are working, you'll not really appreciate it because it's not even your lunch and the game starts off, right?
Absolutely.
But anyway, look, us fans will find a way to watch the game no matter what. Sometimes in the background, sometimes in the foreground, you know, what you were saying yesterday about yesterday's game. Anyway, so coming on.
All right, Sajit, we should do this. If you remember in 1997, the Independence Cup quadrangular tournament was played in India. It started at 4:30 or 4 o'clock, went well past midnight, but who complains? Both the teams will be affected by dew, especially when you go to the north of India, I guess. But yeah, just
I don't see that format returning. That's very, very tough to come back. But regarding your other proposal, I don't think we are there yet, at least for the upcoming World Cup.
Yeah,
maybe in 5 years' time, this might be a realistic approach to try to, you know, cause that analytical side of the teams to also develop as good as their skill set, where you're able to analyze and put some bet on how well you're going to do. But that's probably going to be introduced ground up. You will see some systems where, for example, in England, they've already tried to do away with tosses just to negate the home team advantage and so on. So they'll probably come that way. They'll come that route where it'll be tried at a lower level. And then once we know the full implications of what that can be, probably it'll come to the international level. But something really interesting that you bring up.
Yes.
Now, before we go on to more news, just a quick mention about Zimbabwe-Ireland series that's going on. Real thrillers they are playing out there. You know, we talked about thrillers, India, Sri Lanka and so on. But Zimbabwe versus Ireland is a real, real, very interesting game because, first of all, the 30-20, it was 1-1 going into the decider. Zimbabwe used the home advantage beautifully, right? So they simply beat Ireland by first letting them bat, but then chasing, as you say, backing themselves to chase that total, keeping Ireland down to a middling total and then going on and chasing it. So they won the series, the T20 series 2-1, Zimbabwe, and coming on a high, right? So Ryan Burrell, who was sort of the man of the match in the last T20, was once again the man of the match in the first ODI because here Ireland batted really well. So they had 200s in the middle order and they came up with like 288 score, which is a huge score in these conditions. But then Zimbabwe, it was a rain-affected game. I thought, you know, if the game had gone the distance, Zimbabwe might not have chased that down. But when they came back, they got a modified target. And that, again, they didn't start that well. So, first of all, Sikandar Raza and Ryan Burrell were at the crease. And immediately after resumption, requiring 39 of 23, Sikandar Raza was out. Then you again thought, you know, this is going to be tough. But Ryan Burrell kept at it. I again remember tweeting, saying, oh, this is a lot to do. Clive Madande will have to do something really special. He did. he hit a four off the last ball. That was his first boundary shot. And he did that to win a game. Right? So, Ryan Burl hit a couple of fantastic hits. In the last 7 to 8 balls, they hit 5 boundary shots, Zimbabwe to take the game. So, it was fantastic. I'm still looking for good highlights online. So, I would really like to see even a replay of those last 10 balls rather than highlights. Because the excitement and the tension must have been quite electric. So, wonderful game and wonderful series that's being played a little far away from our vision. Maybe not a lot of broadcasters are also carrying it. But nonetheless, really great to see Zimbabwe sort of always continuing to punch above their weight. Ireland probably will be a bit disappointed at how these last two games have gone on. But you never write Ireland off either. They're going to come back strong. So something to look forward to in this series. Now, going further, let's look at some of the other news. The first big thing I would like to discuss is the women's IPL. We got news that, you know, Viacom 18 has bid a huge number for a 5-year deal. They've bid Indian rupees 951 crore, which is about 116.7 million US dollars. So what that means is each game will be worth about 7.09 crores Indian rupees, right? That's a lot of money if you think about it. Look, we shouldn't compare men's game to women's game and men's IPL to women's IPL, but this number is already so amazing that this tournament has, at its inception, become the second most valuable women's tournament anywhere across all sports. Does this surprise you at all?
Not at all. I don't think so, because if anybody had watched the 2018 or 17 World Cup final at Lords between India and England, I think it was 2017.
Oh man, right? Don't remind me of that. I remember.
So it was again a game for you to lose, and you did that. But and also the semi-final knock by Harmanpreet Kaur against Australia, where she, we have had those kind of things. So when you watch the women's game, I hope I'm not misunderstood. I personally believe the women's game does not have the power that the men's game has. When I say power, the power hitting, the masculinity. So because of that, it's kind of a game that the men's game was back in the 1990s, where 250 plays 230, and that's an absolute beauty. When 240, that's a pass code, that's a different kind of a game. It's not like a turbocharged battle of, you know, heavyweights, but it's a skill, it's craft, and you had to grind it, and that's what the women's game offers. And when it comes to T20s also, it's similar to that. So it has the women's game has an absolute place in the minds of a pure cricket lover, and that's absolutely untapped potential. So I think that's no surprises that the women's IPL has gone for this much. There are so much of brilliant talent going around. I mean, in 2020, before the pandemic, MCG had a 90,000 plus attendance for the India-Australia World T20 final, right? And then if you look at the World Cup that happened this year, if I remember right, it was in New Zealand. And, you know, there were so many thrillers. And Alyssa Healy playing that 170 in the final, England-Australia. That's absolutely immense potential. It's beautiful. And I'm not surprised by this. And it will catch up just like how other men's and women's aspects of different games have evolved. But I sincerely hope that the game has its own identity and doesn't become a slam bang like the men's game, because then you don't want to see the same kind of thing in different across the gender. So I think women's game has its own USP and a niche, and it's an absolute treat to watch as a cricket lover, pure cricket lover.
Absolutely. I think it still retains that a touch of the old school.
I hope it continues that way.
And, you know, to paraphrase what you said, 130 plays or 125 might be very, very interesting as well.
And that the recent India-Australia series, like, how thrilling was that? But I just hope and see that, you know, this league gives opportunities to many other women players from emerging countries as well, which will be good for the game of cricket as a whole.
Absolutely. Now, that brings me to my next point. So, we are now getting to hear the rules of the auction and how much each team is allowed to spend, what's the salary cap and so on and so on. It's very interesting that, you know, starting salary cap is 12 crore Indian rupees. At the end of the first 5-year cycle, it'll be 18 crore rupees. So they're also making it a bit more open. They're allowing 5 overseas players in each team. There are only 5 teams. So that means more overseas players can play. Also, you know, there are other teams like Thailand, which are not very well known in the men's sphere, cricketing sphere. So they would also get opportunities, right? So you always have a couple of Sri Lankan bigwigs who will be there for sure. But I'm hoping, you know, you're right. Some lesser known names, also names from outside of the big 3 or 4 teams, which we keep our eyes on, are also there and they get to shine. You know, this opens a lot of opportunity. For me, the only question which I always used to ask is, are they already a bit late? They could have done this a couple of years ago, but maybe now is the right time. And they have picked the right time. So we really hope, you know, this goes on from strength to strength. And like, I like what Australia did with the BBL, right? So they combined a two-game sort of a playoff where, two-game sort of a set. So you go, you watch the women's game in the morning, you go, you see the men's game later on in the afternoon. I wonder if they're also going to combine some games like this. But also nowadays, I think BBL is moving away from that process. Let's see how it goes. It's every market, you have to figure out what works for you and so on, I guess. So, but all in all, it's heading in the right direction. So we really hope it continues in that same direction. So one other news, we heard Pant, he's had some crucial injuries in his knee ligaments. 3 ligaments are injured. So basically, he might miss most of this year. We really hope, you know, he takes his time. He's a young man. His body, you're a doctor, you know more than me. His body's probably, you know, able to better handle it now than maybe in a couple of years' time. So we really hope he takes all the time he needs, so that he's able to come more stronger. He's a very strong man. Mentally, you know, physically, you know, he's a very strong man. He's shown that on the field. So we really hope the same strength comes through, that he's able to recover and come back much stronger than when he met with this accident. This is one news. The other one is sort of a left field news for me. South Africa are set to name a split captaincy with Shukri Conrad and Rob Walter. Shukri Conrad is sort of going to be... He's sort of already in the setup. He's been under-19 coach, all that. This is a known name. Rob Walter for me was a fully new name. So Lance Klusner was one of the people. Richard Pybus, some of these other people who are known, who have done some coaching in, across the world, they were not to be seen. We also thought Russell Domingo might be in the picture because the way he quit his Bangladesh role, it was sort of very much coinciding with the timing. But none of them are there. So first of all, the split coaching. Do you see this might work for South Africa?
I hope and pray that something works for South Africa, because they have, from the day they made the choice of Vernon Philander over Kyle Abbott in the 2015 World Cup semi-final, things have gone down south. So, you know, nothing has actually worked for them. And like, if you really looked at the way they played in Australia, it was really heartbreaking, because you can't afford to lose South Africa, absolutely amazing cricketing nation. So I don't know how it's going to help them, because even I saw recently, like the squad that they have announced for the English series, they haven't picked some of their best domestic players, as far as I can I understood. So there's a lot of controversy going around. So the best part is, maybe in that kind of a context, it's better, because, you know, you delineate the formats and there are separate think tanks for each format, and that might help them to figure out their own way. Because I mean, you see, England has done that successfully, and hopefully it should work for South Africa as well. And I mean, India has been doing that in an unofficial way, to be not per se clear cut, but you see Dravid and Lakshman alternating between series given the amount of volume of cricket that's been played. So I think it's a good initiative by South Africa, and for cricket's sake, let's hope that it works.
Absolutely. South Africa is a very strong cricketing team across the times, and I hope they rediscover that mojo and they come back stronger. And there are strengths, as you say, in each sort of cricketing setup. They want to probably vitalize both, and they want to bring that both to the fore. Let's see if how that's going to work. Staying with South African cricket, Hashim Amla has decided to hang up his boots he sort of retired from international cricket almost 5 years ago, but he was still playing first class cricket in England for Surrey, and he's decided to finally hang up his boots for good. Absolute gentleman cricketer and one of the most beautiful to watch. I was lucky enough to watch him live a couple of times, and you'll never forget how beautiful he was. I mean, just to give you an example, it's like watching Sangakkara bat or Mahila bat. You will never forget it if you've seen it live. So it's quite something. And specifically Mahila of those two. Really, I really like how he used to play. So anyway, sunsets on another very storied career. We wish Amla all the best going further. A small piece of news that came out is that David Moore has been appointed something called head of programs by Bangladesh Cricket Board. Something that's new, that they want him to focus on, you know, high performance program as well as Bangladesh Tigers program, they call it. So I think more to come from here. He's sort of going to be behind the scenes strategizing, planning, sort of implementing different sort of strategies. I think they want to build a strong base from which Bangladesh cricket can, they have been going through a trough as well. They'll want to bounce back. So interesting appointment, somebody who's had a lot of experience. So hope, you know, Bangladesh cricket will benefit from this appointment. Those were all the news that we wanted to cover. Thank you very much, Arvindan, for giving us your time and your very nice opinions. So for somebody who's in medicine, you have a very good grasp of the nuances of the game, and it comes through in your tweets as well. So no surprises there. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, Ajit. Pleasure connecting with you. It was a wonderful chat.
So before we let you go, is there anything you would like to plug? Apart from your Twitter, of course, anything else? Maybe you write blog articles, maybe something else, something coming up?
Yeah, so basically on Facebook, I have a page called Cricketing Perspectives. And there are quite a lot of articles, mostly related to Sri Lankan cricket. And, you know, the objective of that page is to collate all what I write in the hope that one day I could write a book on Sri Lankan cricket. So that's my, you know, kind of an aspiration. But Cricketing Perspectives, there's quite a lot of content. So if you haven't, if you like Sri Lankan cricket, probably you could drop in there and have a read. And yeah.
Great to hear. We wish you all the best in your endeavors, you know, leading up to maybe a book in a couple of years. We really hope we can also have you back on the podcast as a guest again and again, somebody who can offer us a very unique perspective on Sri Lankan cricket. So thank you very much. And we wish all our listeners a good day wherever they may be listening from. So it's a goodbye from me and my guest, Arvindan. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Ajit. Bye.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.